and welcome to the Start Me Up podcast. It's April 3rd, and I'm Kimberly Johnson in Washington, D.C. My co-host Steph Walton is off today, but she says to say hello to everybody and that she'll be back next week. I'm excited today because it's the official launch of the weekly version of the Start Me Up podcast. So we're adding two free shows per month, and we're also going to be adding a women's roundtable with a different panel of guests each time, and we'll be discussing a variety of issues that concern women. I'm not sure when the first one will be this month, but there will be two this month, so stay tuned. And also I'm excited because today my guest is Tina Cassidy, and she's the author of the new book, Mr. President, How Long Must We Wait? Alice Paul, Woodrow Wilson, and the Fight for the Right to Vote. It's an eye-opening, inspiring, and timely account of the complex relationship between notable suffragist Alice Paul and President Woodrow Wilson in her fight for women's equality. This is going to be a fascinating conversation. But before we get going, I'd just like to remind everybody that Start Me Up is an independent podcast, and we're supported by listeners. So you can support the podcast by becoming a monthly subscriber for any dollar amount, whether it's $1 or $5, $10, $25. $5 gets you into And Another Thing, which is the segment we do after free shows. And FYI, today, that show will be free. And I'm going to be talking to writer Sarah Wood. We're going to be talking about toxic masculinity and what's considered appropriate and not appropriate behavior in the workplace. So be sure to tune into that one. It's going to be an interesting chat. But now, I would like to welcome my guest, Tina Cassidy, to the show. Hey, Tina.
Hi.
Thank you for coming on. I'm really excited to talk to you about your book because I, as you know, am an Equal Rights Amendment activist, and Alice Paul wrote the ERA. But before she did that, she wrote the amendment for women's suffrage, for women voting. So you wrote all about that.
Yes, I did. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Alice Paul is one of those figures from history who should be much better known than she is because mm-hmm. she's done so many things, including enfranchising half the population. And ultimately, she wrote two constitutional amendments, which is pretty remarkable for anybody.
Yes, indeed. And interestingly enough, before we get into this, the amendments are not very different in the way that they're worded. And so I think it's fascinating that sometimes critics of the Equal Rights Amendment are insistent on changing the wording, but nobody seems to be confused with the wording of the Voting Rights Amendment. So it's ridiculous to me. She was such an incredibly smart woman, and you wrote all about her. So let's just dig in. First mm-hmm. of all, I want to ask you, is this the first book you've ever written?
Nope, this is my fourth book.
Wow.
I generally write nonfiction about the intersection of women and culture. My first book was on the history of childbirth, and then I wrote a book about Jacqueline Onassis and her life in 1975. That's called Jackie After O. So that's really a book about the third act. And then this book, of course, also falls into that. So I'm definitely interested in history and women and, what can become a strong narrative at the intersection of all of that.
Wow. So what inspired you to write this book?
This book came about because in the summer of 2016, I was scrolling Twitter one morning while I was trying to work on a novel, and I came across a hashtag for Women's Equality Day. For those who don't know what that is, it marks the date in August when the 19th Amendment, which granted women the vote, was ratified. And I went down a whole Google rabbit hole to find out, how this amendment came to be, who were the forces involved. And I discovered just this incredible story that I had never heard before. And it's really a bummer that I had never heard it before. It mm-hmm. should be a story that every school child learns, definitely before graduating high school, let alone college. And this was just never part of any curriculum of mine.
And nor mine.
Yeah. Right. So I feel like this is a story that we all should know. I mean, as much as we know about Martin Luther King and the strides he made in the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. everyone needs to know who Alice Paul was and what the suffrage movement looked like, what it went through, how it evolved, and what we can learn from it today. That's ultimately what this book is about. For me, it was a way of understanding history so that I could apply it to our current situation.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about Alice Paul and what she was like and what inspired her to get involved and do what she did in this movement.
Yeah. So Alice Paul was a Quaker from New Jersey, and she was born in the late 1800s to a Quaker family who really brought her up believing that equality was essential. They believed everyone was created equal. As a child, she went to suffrage meetings with her mother, and she had a real belief in social justice. And so one of the things that she did after she graduated college was she moved to England to learn more about social justice there at a Quaker institution. And it was there that she saw the suffrage movement at sort of a critical point in that moment in time. This was when women were getting incredibly agitated and organized. And so Alice Paul joined them and learned everything she could from that movement, and then she brought it back to America.
Wow. So what was her superpower?
Her superpower was being single-minded. But as with most superpowers, that was also her fatal flaw, right?
Interesting,
and,
right.
Yes. So she was so single-minded about this idea that women deserve the vote and that everyone should be considered equal. She devoted her entire life to it. So we all owe her thanks for that.
Yes.
I think, even after she won the vote through the 19th Amendment in 1920, mm-hmm. 3 years later, she wrote the Equal Rights Amendment, which we are still debating today, and really just dedicated the rest of her life to equality. So, I mean, that's all amazing. She was a taskmaster. She was indefatigable. She knew how to raise money. She knew how to organize. All in the name of that very narrow goal of equality. I would say that one issue that Alice Paul had was that she never was able to. She was so focused on what it would take to win the vote that she was unable to really understand that for Black women they could not separate race from gender, mm-hmm. and said okay to her. To African Americans who were involved in the suffrage movement, we're going to win you the vote. But what she couldn't see is that Black women knew that they would be disenfranchised almost immediately due to racism. She just couldn't wrap her head around that. So I think, that single-mindedness was both a benefit and one of her challenges.
I have a question on what you're just talking about as far as Black women being... Are you saying Black women would be disenfranchised even with the 19th Amendment in place?
Yes, absolutely. So this is exactly what happened to Black men after the Civil War when there was a constitutional amendment that granted them the vote. What happened was many states, particularly in the South, imposed poll taxes and literacy tests to prevent them from voting.
Wow.
And Black women knew that the same thing would happen to them, and that is, in fact, exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And it's why in the 1960s we eventually got the Voting Rights Act to try to strip away some of those impositions on voting, especially for people of color. And, I mean, let's face it, there are still challenges with access to voting today.
Wow, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Curiously, I mean, when you wrote this book, obviously you did a lot of research, and I can only imagine that you saw as you were writing it some of the parallels in what's happening today. So
Absolutely.
Like that period in history and how it mimics today, what are some of those things that you think we have in common with that time?
Yeah. Well, there are a few very specific things and then some larger issues, maybe just starting with the specifics. First, Alice Paul organized the first Women's March. So this was in 1913.
Interesting.
She only had 2 months to pull it together. And it's shocking to think of what she was able to accomplish in such a short amount of time with basically no money in the days before email. Also, many people didn't even have telephones at that time. And she was able to get 8,000 people to march down Pennsylvania Avenue toward the White House to impress on the incoming president, Woodrow Wilson, that women wanted the vote. And it was nothing like this had ever happened before. Women had never organized in a protest of this scale or in this location. And so it was epic and had a real impact on setting the tone for Wilson's presidency, even though he was staunchly against granting women the vote. And she knew that, and that's why she organized this in the way she did. It was a catalytic moment for women getting organized. So that's one example of how it parallels today. The second issue is that Woodrow Wilson, as a presidential figure, was in office at an important time in American history. This was the start of what we now today call the progressive movement. It was a time when the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People was organized, when unions were becoming organized, the AFL-CIO emerges from this period. And yet he was in the White House as a progressive Democrat saying, I'm putting a stop to basically progress on social issues. So not only was he against women's suffrage, but he one of the first things he did in office was he segregated the civil service. That meant, Black people who worked at the post office had to work behind screens so that the public didn't see them. Black and white employees could not eat lunch at the same table anymore. It meant that Black patrons had to go to a different window to get government services. It meant that Black people who were applying for government jobs had to submit a photograph so that decisions could be made based on race. So it was incredibly harmful to our democracy and to our culture. So there's Woodrow Wilson. The other thing that's happening is that World War I breaks out, and Wilson is struggling with what America's role should be during the war. And one thing he was not going to have was any dissent. So he was highly critical of the press, and basically was highly critical of anyone who would be protesting against him. So there became sort of a mob mentality out there. There were vigilante teams. So anyone who was not in the war, walking down the street, they would just round people up and say, you know, you must be a spy because you're not overseas fighting.
Wow.
And then the third thing, this is just kind of hilarious, is that there was a big brouhaha with Russia. right? Of course there was. And Alice Paul exploited this to her benefit. So there was some Russian envoys who came to the U.S. to talk to Wilson about the war. And at that time, Russia allowed its women to vote. And Alice Paul saw this opening of, well, here we are in America fighting for democracy abroad, and yet you're not even letting American women vote. And so they protested while the Russian delegation was arriving, and it created just sort of an international firestorm and made Woodrow Wilson incredibly angry. And then he started arresting the protesters.
Wow. And then, yeah, there were suffragists who were standing outside of the White House holding signs wanting him to listen to them, and they got arrested. And this is the part of the story that, of course, for me, because I've always liked the most sensational part of any story. And to me, the most sensational part was that the fact that these women, Alice Paul and all the women that worked with her, were willing to go to jail for this. And not only were they willing to go to jail, they went on hunger strikes. Right. And I mean, you know, your book did a fantastic job of describing the prison conditions, which were just abysmal. I mean, that, you know, reading that there were open toilets that could only be flushed from the outside.
Imagine.
And the food that they had to eat. You gave great detail on what it was like in prison and what it was like for